number two of Canucks Central. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Canucks back in action tomorrow against the Boston Bruins. Last night I did the thing and went to watch Gladiator 2. And I don't know why. Like, I see the popcorn topping thing all the time at the theater. Mm-hmm. I never go anywhere near it. To me, it's like, I don't want any of this smoke on my popcorn.
Yeah, I just asked for, I mean, you just get the butter.
I don't even get real butter. I think it tastes fine without it.
Really?
Yeah.
You gotta get some butter on
popcorn. No, it's
popcorn.
Fine. Really? I don't need a dollar worth of butter.
No, is it the dollar or the butter?
It's both.
Okay.
But like, what is actually in the popcorn topping? Maybe one of life's great mysteries. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Don Taylor. Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Czech TV. Donnie, you ever go for the popcorn topping at the movie theater?
You mean golden topping as opposed to butter?
They don't call it butter, so it really makes you think, what is this actually? I don't know. It's just it's off to the side, and you push a button, and it squirts out. Like, I don't know about this.
Yeah. And then do they still have the – I saw a couple movies last year in the theater. Obviously, I stopped a bit during COVID. But what about the shakers, like, you know, the all-dressed or barbecue salt shakers?
You got to pay for those now. This is extra.
What?
Yeah. It's a little bit extra. Everything's an extra dollar.
Well, there was a time, I don't know what the situation is now, and this was documented in the movie The Founder, which I loved. It was about Ray Kroc, when they didn't have milk in McDonald's milkshakes.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of similar to the non-butter in the with the popcorn in the movie theaters. I don't know. I don't want to piss anybody off who's from McDonald's or whatever. I don't know what they're putting in their milkshakes now, but it was a cost-saving measure that obviously really worked. That was a great movie. How was Gladiator 2 is the big question.
I'm not going to give any spoilers. You know,
okay.
I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to play the don't. Afraid to give any kind of spoilers. I don't even want to give an opinion on it because I don't want people going into the movie thinking it's like supposed to be great or supposed to be bad. So I'm playing Switzerland.
I think it sounds like he didn't like the movie, Donnie.
No, way to take a firm stance. No, here's my thoughts on Gladiator 2 going in. I haven't seen it yet, but if Denzel's in a movie, it's good.
Yeah,
like I don't know. Has he made a bad movie? Like, I love Flight and I love Training Day and there's so many others. He's so good. If he's in a movie, chances are it's pretty good. So I'm going to see it for sure.
You're pretty right on Denzel. Like, even there was some like random movie where he's a pilot on Netflix. I'm like, I'm firing this up, and it was great. You know, it's just like,
Well, was that Flight? I don't know if it was where he flew the plane. I shouldn't tell anyone.
Yeah, Flight. That was Flight.
Upside down.
Yeah, Flight. Upside down. Yeah,
it's in the trailer. So yeah. Great show.
And of course, the Equalizer movies where he just beats crap out of a bunch of people. Yeah. Like, you're 70 years old, but I don't know. I still believe it. It's great. So the Vancouver Canucks, Donnie, felt like, you know, they kind of got back into it on Saturday night. We saw the defensive identity, and it almost felt like the and Carson Soucy said this after the game, the intensity of that game had them raise their level as a group as well. But it was nice to see the Canucks starting to get back to Rick Tocchet hockey, wasn't it?
Well, you know what I thought? I didn't say this on the show today, but I just thinking back to that game, I think it was fun. I think that was a fun game. They were the keep away. They played for a minute and a half on a delayed penalty. But I thought that part of what Ottawa was doing when Hughes went out was trying to goad one of the five defensemen into a fight, in a penalty, whatever the case may be, because they were only down to five defensemen. And I thought those five defensemen played really, really well. And I think they were having fun. And I know the Senators are the greatest team in the world. I understand that. But I think they had a whole lot of fun antagonizing them, especially Brady Tkachuk. I think that they really had a fun time in that game. And maybe we haven't seen that in a while. Mm-hmm. And for them to win a game in which they were missing four of their top, what, five, six players, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a jumping off point where they can start doing something special. Unfortunately, it wasn't at home. But other than that, pretty impressive effort for their seventh straight road win. I just think that it was really an edgy, fun game to watch if you're a Canuck fan. And it got a little scary at the end with the two late Ottawa goals. But I just think they they found some fun in that game, and I think it's still a kid's game. I think it's important.
100%. And one of the things that I really liked about the game too was the Canucks were that veteran team that was able to see that this Sens team was immature and coming unglued, and they just kind of goaded them and let them make their mistakes and fall. Essentially, made them step on the rake themselves. And it was nice to see that this Canucks team is capable of having that mature moment and really making a young team look pretty foolish.
Yeah, and keep in mind that there's youngsters on the Canucks as well, especially on that fourth line. I thought Sasson, for the 7 minutes he played, was pretty darn good. He was really noticeable, especially obviously on the Bluger goal. But you know, Ratu was there, and they looked really mature, very very together, solid. And I just thought, again, I know it was Ottawa. I don't want to say just Ottawa. These are NHL players we're talking about. I thought it was pretty impressive that if they go on to do something special on this road trip, people will look back at that game and playing with all those great players and still winning rather impressively was really, 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 really important.
You know what Max Sasson showed all of us, though? We're all still suckers for a great first NHL game story, right?
Yeah. It's just
out of nowhere to make his way into the league, gets cut from a bunch of teams, goes undrafted all the way through college. Then his dad's there, and he's like 24, and his dad's there seeing his first assist. It's just, honestly, it's the good stuff. I don't know what else to call it.
And I think part of what, by the way, are we going with Sasson, by the way? Because that's what Chris Cuthbert was calling him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dollywell's going with Sasson. I don't know what the hell.
It's not shampoo.
I don't know. But anyway, he's adamant about it today.
And the Vidal Sasson.
Is that what the agent told him?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was great. I think what really made it, the visual of his dad, Al, I think is his name, and his whole family just going nuts. And the interview afterwards where he saw his dad cheering for the first time with Kyle Viskoskis, I thought that was incredible. That was he's a really well-spoken kid. You can tell he's having the time of his life. And it is a good story, along with Kiefer Sherwood's story. It was a real, real fun day. But I just thought those visuals of his family, especially his dad, and I love what he had to say about his dad. That's the way he reacted. And this was just an assist, not just an assist, what an assist it was. But that was the way he reacted after every goal in Pee Wee and Bantam back in the day. So no, it was really, really a good night for the Canucks.
Yeah, and I think they get the defense gets a few bonus points too for how they played in the absence of Quinn Hughes. He gets the ejection early on, which I know a lot of us debated, but it's the way it's written in the rule book, so kind of hard to dispute it too much. But you know, for guys like Soucy, that's had a really tough start to the year, thought he played well, and you know, for Brännström to get put in a bigger spot and be forced into playing some tougher minutes and still show well, that was I think that was pretty big. It probably earned him a few extra or a longer leash with the coaching staff, I would imagine.
Yeah, and keep in mind that was his old team too that he was playing, so that was extra fun. I keep using that word, but extra fun for him as well. Soucy played with a lot of edge. They were going after him all night, and I think he really, really enjoyed it. And you know, playing with five defensemen can be tough. And Hronek played 27 plus minutes. He was a stud, and not a lot of talk about him afterwards, but he deserved a lot of talk. But you know, playing with five defensemen can be confusing for a coach. But the players at that level can handle it, but they really, really did a good job. I was very, very impressed.
Can they split up the Sherwood, Pedersen, and DeBrusque line to fit Besser in there if he plays tomorrow?
Oh gosh, I don't think they can. I think Besser wasn't on that line today at practice, whatever that's worth. But I just don't think they can. What 7 points last game, and the last three games with the deep stats have been really, really good for them. And they want to get DeBrusque going on some sort of run, and he sure looked good the other day. And I just don't think you can. It just seems kind of magical right now, and maybe it's short term. But I think you gotta keep going. And Kiefer Sherwood does not look out of place in the top six. And we asked the question today: something to the effect of are there Alex Burrows comparisons here? I know that's really, really early, but undrafted, out of nowhere. The difference with Sherwood is that, unlike Alex, he's bounced around in the NHL. I mean, this is his fourth organization. He's been given up on by three other teams. And, you know, at 29, he's really showing something there. There's offense to his game. It's just really, really surprising.
Yeah, and he's just always in position to make a hit. It's remarkable what he's been able to do. And it probably helps that Pedersen's going again. Are you ready to say Pedersen is back, Donnie?
Well, it's certainly better than it was at the end of last season and the start of this season.
Yeah.
So let's start there. Is he back all the way where I'm going to say 11-6 is a good number? I'm not so sure about that. Hats off to him for getting that kind of contract. But I'll tell you what, one play, and I will say that it's really, really promising right now, obviously, with him. He's moving his feet. Like we how many times, guys, have we talked about that? Well, he wasn't moving his feet. Now he's moving his feet. But early on, I forget who it was, but he hit somebody. And it kind of set the tone for the game. And it was a good hit. I don't know if Saturday, if you remember who it was he hit, but it was
Stützle.
You know, one of your players, one of your better players, comes up with something like that. That was big. Mm-hmm. That was a big moment. That's what you look for a guy who's supposed to be one of your stars.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And you know, we need to see more. I think that there is more to his game. I think he's been fantastic, and we're seeing it rise, and it's promising. And there's even more that he can provide, and hopefully does as this road trip goes on here. But you know, you mentioned the back end earlier, and an individual on the back end who's kind of really garnering a lot of love from Canucks fans is Erik Brännström, and how he's fared. And I thought against the Sens was the first time where he got put into a bit of an adverse situation where he had to handle bigger minutes. He had to handle a bigger role. He had to play in different situations. And I thought he handled it really well. And there was motivation, obviously, being with the Sens from before, the team that traded for him and didn't quite work out, didn't re-sign him this past offseason. But it's getting harder and harder to argue that he's incapable of playing a bigger role for this team.
Yeah, and when you know, we were thinking last week about how when things weren't as rosy for them, you know, what would they do to if they have to change up their defensive pairings, what would you do? And one of the things we thought of, Brännström deserves to be on that second. This is before the Ottawa game. You know, maybe deserves to be on a second pairing if you were gonna move Hronek to his old pairing, because he's been that good. He's a good skater. And that's you know, where you start with any decent NHL player. He was just such a throw-in in that deal. I mean, did anyone even pay attention? And he goes down to Abbotsford. Clearly, he looked like he was too good to play down there. And it's been really, really positive with him. And, you know, kind of almost, you know, not quite the same, but kind of Sherwood-esque. You know, later in his career, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, this guy's got something and he's a fit on this team, whereas he might not have been elsewhere.
So with the Bruins on the docket tomorrow, first look at Nikita Zadorov and Elias Lindholm with their new squad. Which of those two players, Zadorov or Lindholm, do the Canucks miss more this season in your eyes?
That's a good one. Lindholm in the playoffs was good. I'm going to say Zadorov.
Mm.
And because I just think, could you imagine if they had that combination of Zadorov and Sherwood, like one guy up front laying hits and another. And again, I know the start hasn't been great in Boston, but somebody with some meanness in their game and the back end, they make the playoffs and the opposition has to go against two guys like that. And nothing against Lindholm, but I always like guys, always like players who wake the building up. Wake Rogers Arena or GM Place or the Coliseum, whatever the case may be through the years. I always like players like that. And Zadorov was like that in the playoffs last year. And it's the same with Sherwood. So my vote would go to Zadorov. Again, I know things aren't perfect for him in Boston, but the question was, who would you rather have? And for me, it would be Zadorov.
Yeah, the thing with Zadorov, though, that kind of makes me wonder about things a bit is we're already hearing, like according to Elliot Friedman, that the Bruins were asking Zadorov to handle the puck less. And we know that he wanted to be a bit more expansive and do more and play up the lineup. And we know that every stop he's been at, it's ended somewhat sour. Even in Vancouver,
yeah.
He held some resentment towards the end. And maybe that's just how he's wired and how he motivates himself. And there's nothing wrong with that for these pro athletes. But that's the one thing I wonder about. Is he a guy who's actually capable of not wearing out his welcome? Because it seems like things aren't going all that well for him already in Boston.
Yeah, I wonder about that too, Sab, because maybe we're blinded by what happened in the playoffs when he was so good that we forget that there was a point, and he joined the Canucks on November 30th of last year. And or as Bick referred to it last week, November 31st.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But
that day doesn't exist. No. It didn't last week and it still doesn't.
Oh, I called him on it. but we forget there was a scratch or two in there too. And it wasn't perfect for him during the regular season, but man, did he ever pick it up in the playoffs? It was just a lot of fun. I'm using the word fun, but it was fun with him, and we'll see what happens in Boston. It just seemed like a perfect fit for him, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Boston, but
yeah,
like a lot of other things in Boston this year, things haven't worked out for him. But it's early.
Yeah, he's trying to live up to the Bruins toughness mentality. He's second in the league in penalty minutes so far this year. Is Nikita Zadorov? I think a lot of Canucks fans won't feel bad if this is sort of the beginning of the end for this long Bruins era where they've been one of the top teams. It's lasted forever. I commend them for how long they've been a contender, and maybe it isn't quite over yet. You know, they've won a couple of games since changing head coaches. It's just, you know, it feels like this team, this Bruins team, doesn't have the ceiling of being a Stanley Cup contender. They're just, they're almost past their best before date, it feels like.
Yeah, it's real frustrating for Canuck fans. I'm sure they don't, you know, anybody who remembers 2011 doesn't feel bad for Boston at all.
Yeah.
In large part because they were so easy to hate for Canuck fans back in 2011, but also because they barely dipped. And then the other thing that I find amazing about what Boston has been able to do, you know, making Stanley Cup finals, you know, in multiple years after winning in 2011, is that, and this is all due respect to Jake DeBrusk, they blew a draft. They had three straight first-rounders in 2015, and Jake DeBrusk was the best of the three, and he's the only guy that's made any sort of impact in the NHL. You know, they passed up on so many great players, including Brock Besser in that draft. You know, you remember, guys, when they had the three straight drafts in the teens in the first round, you know, Shabbat was there. I think Kyle Connor was there. They passed up all those guys. But they were still a really good hockey team. Just shows you how good that team was in 2011, that core. So that's frustrating for Canucks fans, to me, just because they didn't really ever take a dip like the Canucks did, and no one's feeling bad for Boston right now.
Donnie, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
And anytime, guys. Always fun.
There he is, Don Taylor. The legend himself, Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Check TV, and he joins us every Monday here on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah.
Yeah.
This text from Joe and Smithers: Zadorov joined and things changed, but does Besser take that hit if Zadorov is in the lineup? From Tanner Janot, I think he's referring to.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, teams that Zadorov has been on in the past haven't had players get cheap-shotted.
Yeah.
It happens. You know, like, I don't think there's a player who...
I mean, Brandon Carlo got smoked by Jamie Benn, and Zadorov had to go in for the fight, but the hit still happened.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think, though, that Zadorov in the playoffs was a massive deterrent. When he was on the ice, nobody messed with him.
Yeah.
So I think Joe is not wrong in the assessment that in the playoffs, he really was somebody that was a real equalizer. Nobody messed with him in the playoffs. He knew he could take anybody, and when he imposed his will, there was really nobody that could match him. And I could understand why you think of that value being so important in the playoffs, and why it may be worth getting through all the other stuff to have him part of your playoff team.
I will say, for all the flack that Zadorov has been taking, you know, he played over 22 minutes in their recent game, recent win over the Detroit Red Wings. Also played 20 minutes against Utah, where they beat Utah 1-0. Yeah. So Joe Sacco has leaned on him as a top four defenseman here in these last couple of games. He's almost averaged 20 minutes a night here for the Bruins, which is, I would say, a career high for... I mean, he just averaged 17 minutes with Vancouver last year. So, you know, it's the Canucks used him mostly as a 4-5-6 type. And with the Bruins now, with this new contract, he's expected to be a bit more than that.
Yeah, and they want him to do do less. So we'll talk to Ty Anderson coming up.
Do next less. Segment.
Do less. It's just like Kunu from...
If Sat was an NHL coach, that would be like his mantra. Not like embrace hard.
Do less. Just do less.
It would just say do less. Less.
Do less.
In the room in big letters.
They'd have it on one of those signs.
Yeah. You guys know how much I hate busy players, right? Just drives me nuts.
You don't need to be a cardio king out there, all right? Just do less. Just do less.
Looking right at Connor Garland as he says it.
Hey, not so much Connor, but... You know, there's Hoagie been, there's nowadays. Been
a lot. No, Hoaglander nowadays.
Hoaglander nowadays. I know.
Speaking of Hoaglander.
Okay.
Besser comes back in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is Hoaglander on the radar to go out? Or is,
no.
is the easy option Sasson or Baines?
I think Baines.
Yeah.
I know Baines got the power play time and got some more time, but I, as much as I don't like Hoaglander's defensive game, to me, he's still a better player and more effective than Baines is right
yeah.
now. So I would keep Hoaglander in. I think it'd be a bit harsh. He had some bad moments again.
Mm-hmm.
Baines had some moments where he was just overmatched, but yeah. not making the same mistakes. But to me, it's like overmatched mistakes,
mm-hmm.
tomato-tomato almost, right? Like it's still leading to not good things. And if you look at some of the rates, Baines is... aren't great either defensively and yeah. what happens, you know, goals against per 60. So I'd keep Hoaglander in, but he's kind of borderline.
It's getting close.
It is.
Right? Like if Miller were to come back and Besser, you know, now we're having a conversation about it. Because I don't think Ratu's coming out of the lineup anytime soon. Sure, Sasson probably goes out of the lineup too. Maybe not coming off the assist, but, you know, the issues with Hoaglander are right there in the numbers for you to see. Like it's not hard to find out why the coach doesn't trust him much right now.
Yeah, Sat. He has the worst goals against per 60 on the team for forwards that are regulars on the team.
Yeah.
You know, take Baines out and he's not a regular. He has the most. He's been on the ice for 13 goals against 5-on-5, which is yeah. more than any other forward. And he's not playing big minutes either.
Yeah.
You know, and he's only been on the ice for 9-4, 5-on-5. That's a -4, 5-on-5 only, right? And he's not being productive. That's the other side of it. So yet, you know, some people point, like even with Soucy and Myers have been on the ice for fewer goals against 5-on-5 than Hoaglander has.
That's a pretty remarkable number, yeah. remarkable stat. It hasn't gone the way that you would have hoped for Nils Hoaglander. Hopefully he comes out of this slump soon.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to, you know, Tyler from Abbotsford and others were asking, we spoke about this with Frank Ciravalli, so you go back and listen to it and we'll get into it a bit more, but the whole Chris Kreider, mm-hmm. you know, Rangers thing. I'm a big Chris Kreider fan. And like I said on air, when I put it out on Twitter today, I had a couple of people replying like, oh, I don't know about Kreider 33, you know, maybe, and they're trying to dump him before he falls off. But this wouldn't be the first time the Rangers have shopped Kreider. So to me, that's not the big surprise. But the thing that surprised me a little bit was the messages I got from people that watch him closely mm-hmm. and not fans, like people in the industry. And they weren't very complimentary of his 5-on-5 game.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised by that because I'm like, in Vancouver, like he looked really good. And like, well, actually, he was good in Vancouver. But, you know, I was like, okay, I was a bit surprised. Now I don't watch the Rangers that closely, but every time I watch him, I like Kreider generally. So there is some hesitancy. I don't know if I agree with Frank to some degree that they're somewhat similar with mm-hmm. JT and him, that, but they don't play fully the same way. JT's far better playmaker, like people texted into during that segment. I think both guys could coexist. I just don't think there's a trade fit. Vancouver. I like the player. I just don't know how it would work with Vancouver.
Yeah, $6.5 million against the cap is Chris Kreider.
You can't make that move unless you're trading a guy like Garland, right? Or trading a Besser. Like that is just the reality of the cap.
There is so much to like in Kreider's game, but I would imagine that if I'm Chris Drury and I'm wondering why this Rangers team is struggling to take that next step, it really comes down to their 5-on-5 play. And so, you know, looking at some guys, older guys that haven't had a ton of success at 5-on-5, and Kreider is probably one of them. So that's probably what the Rangers are thinking right now. Though at the same time, you know, they have an elite power play, and Kreider is a big reason they have an elite power play because yeah. he is the best net front player in the league right now. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, Ty Anderson covering the Boston Bruins. He's next on Sportsnet 650.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
final segment of Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Canucks continuing this six-game road trip following their win over the Ottawa Senators on Saturday. They head into Beantown, take on the Boston Bruins, who got a couple of wins since making a head coaching change last week. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Ty Anderson, writer and host of The Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston. Thanks for this, Ty. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making time. It's I guess it's been an interesting start to the season for the Bruins, hey?
Yeah, definitely. I think not everyone, I mean, no one really saw this coming. I think you could have projected a come down for some certain, you know, certain guys at career years a year ago, you know, like Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, especially when you bring in Elias Lindholm to basically take away some of their minutes on the power play on the top line. But you've had a heavy regression from a lot of guys across the board. And here they are right now. They're just starting to turn the corner. It looks like they're 10-9-3. They're 2-0 under new head coach Joe Sacco. So things are starting to turn, but ultimately this team is not what Don Sweeney envisioned it to be when he built it on July 1, for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when it comes to Joe Sacco and the job he has to do, it puts him into a bit of a tough situation, but the expectation right now is just to kind of get through the season with him, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they're saying right now. I mean, Joe Sacco has been around for over a decade now in the organization. He's survived the Claude regime, survived the Bruce Cassidy regime, and the Jim Montgomery regime. So this is a guy that the Bruins have clearly valued. And at times, they've wondered if they were going to lose him. I know that people within their walls were thinking that they could lose him to Anaheim back when they had their head coaching search last. But he stuck by. He's been a good soldier, a guy that really sort of, I think, understands the organizational ethos, I guess, if that's the right way to say it, of what they want to be, how to get there, and the messaging. You know, he's been a pretty consistent guy in that regard. Now, he's had to go from being, you know, the good cop to the bad cop now. But when it comes to what the Bruins want to be, which is being hard to play against, being strong in your own zone, and really capitalizing on your special teams play, like, that's kind of what has been his bread and butter as an assistant and now the interim head coach. So they're not putting anything on it beyond this year, but this is a guy that I think people within their walls have been dying to know what he would look like as a head coach. He got a little run back in December 21 when Bruce Cassidy had COVID. He got six games. They went 3-1-2, but you know, you're basically a temporary head coach. Like, you're not implementing your system and your structure and your changes. But this is totally a coach who I think has caught their eye, and they've always been curious about deep down. And now with 62 games to go, or 62 when he was hired, he has that chance now.
I guess the question is, no matter who the coach is there enough offense on this team for it to score enough to get into the playoffs and be a credible contender the way that they hope to be?
I don't think so. I think they would tell you the same thing right now, is that they built this team knowing that they were a top six winger short. They were curious if guys like Geeky, who had 17 goals a year ago, Trent Frederick, who shot 14% for two straight years, if they could continue to build on that, but that hasn't been the case so far. So they knew that they were already entering the year a top six winger short, and that's sort of been, I think, really amplified here out of the gate. Now, what I can say to you, though, is that internally they would look at and say that they are not playing the structure and the system they need to play to get the most out of those players. This whole idea of quality over quantity, that's great if you got snipers, but you don't. You have a bunch of big body guys who go to the front of the net, they bang home rebounds, they score deflection goals, they score tips. You know, outside of Marchand, Pastrnak, and I would say Pavel Zacha when he trusts his shot, they don't have a lot of guys who have natural goal-scoring ability. So I think that's been a huge problem for them as well. The way that they were trying to score, doesn't jive with the roster that they have. Like, they don't have the roster they had in 22-23 when you had Taylor Hall and then Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, later in the year playing in middle six roles. Like, you're not that team anymore. And so I think that's been a huge reason why their offense has dropped off. They've tried to be something they're not. And I think under Joe Sacco, you're going to see a more simplified approach, and you know, for the Bruins, ugly might be actually prettier for them because they're not built to go end to end and scoring these beautiful goals. They're just not that deep.
No, absolutely. And I think what, you know, the situation they kind of find themselves in too is they've made a lot of big commitments. You saw it this offseason. We'll get to Zadorov and Lindholm, especially with a lot of fans here really intrigued by things with those guys and what could happen in the future. But it's not like Boston's going into a rebuild. So how do they go about improving this roster between now and next season?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think a lot of it comes back down to what do you do with a guy like Trent Frederick? This is a guy that they've developed. They are finally at a point where they feel like he's the player that he can be in this league, but he's never going to be Tom Wilson, right? Which is, I think, to a certain degree, it's kind of what they wanted when they drafted him. They wanted a power forward who could impact the game and change the tenor of the game with physicality and with some offensive firepower. He's not that consistently enough, and I think that he struggles with confidence at times. He can get in his own head, I think, more than other players. But this is someone who, if he's not in your long-term plans, if you don't want to pay him, let's say, $4.5 million per year, that's a player that you should see what else is out there. See if someone is crazy enough or desperate enough to replicate the Tanner Janot package that Nashville got from Tampa Bay. Like, that would make sense because you hear about, you know, I think Elliot Friedman's reported that teams want guys that have bite and have snarl. Okay, well, if the market is short on that and you're not going to want to pay the guy what he could make, capitalize on that. Don't do what you've done again and again and let guys walk as UFAs. You know, Jake DeBrusque is a great example. Probably should have traded that guy and got something for him versus getting nothing. Troy Krug, another one. Like, probably someone you should have gotten something for. So that's been a problem for this team repeatedly throughout this tenure of Don Sweeney as the GM, and you understand it to a certain degree because you have been a win-now team. But if we're being honest, these guys are not a true Stanley Cup contender. So if you can make some minor moves that replenish your pipeline, whether it's with picks or prospects or just more ammo to then parlay that into something bigger, I think you have to start taking those calls because you've put them off for so long now.
Ty Anderson, our guest here on Canucks Central, Canucks and Bruins tomorrow. So which of Zadorov and Lindholm has been more impressive to start this season?
You know, it's I would say Lindholm. The results don't back that up, but I think in terms of what the Bruins were missing mm-hmm. when Patrice Bergeron retired, which is, you know, winning little battles, maintaining possession, a key D-zone faceoff win, like things of that nature, he's been pretty solid in that regard. And yes, you want more points. And I think the most jarring thing for me with Elias Lindholm is just how hard on himself he is. Mm. And it hits the point where you're kind of like, oh, is this like a confidence issue? Like, I get it. I like you falling on the sword, but I also need you to have a little bit of confidence here if you're going to pull yourself out of it. And I think that, so he's a guy that I think has been more consistent in terms of the details and playing the way that they want him to play, doing little things. And again, the points, they got to be there as well. He scores a goal against Utah last Thursday. That's a step in the right direction. It hasn't been there enough. The chemistry there with Pastrnak really hasn't been there. Now he's playing with Brad Marchand, probably a better fit for him. But I would say that of the two, Lindholm has done more little things. At the same time, I would say that Nikita Zadorov's last two games have been his best two games as a Bruin. I feel like he is going to accept the coaching of Joe Sacco, who is more Boston blunt, tells you how it is, not afraid to, you know, rip into if he's got to, than say the positive reinforcement, everything is awesome, of a Jim Montgomery.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Zadorov, and we saw it in Vancouver as well, when he's confident, when he feels like he's a big part of a team, he can make a massive impact. And, you know, listening to 32 Thoughts, one of the things Elliot mentioned was that maybe Zadorov has been asked to handle the puck a little bit less. As far as trying to get the best out of him and how that may work under Sacco, like what do you see the best path forward for him to really be able to earn that salary?
Yeah, I think you want him driving a pairing. You know, that's a Bruce Cassidy line. You want guys that can drive a pairing. But if you have Charlie McAvoy and you have Hampus Lindholm, okay, then Zadorov's going to drive his pairing. Now, is that going to be a third pairing or, you know, a 2A and a 2B? That's how they kind of probably look at it. Like, the Bruins don't look at their pairings as having three pairings. They look at it like all three of them are going to play relatively equal amounts of time because they like having a stabilizer on all three. So I think that's one of the bigger things that Zagorov is going to perhaps get under Sacco, is just more, to your point, responsibility, being able to lead a rush, make some plays happen, versus just being a statue who goes out there and hits guys. And this is one thing that's kind of worried me about Zadorov in his first year here, is that he signs here. The highlight reel, it's the hits, it's the fighting, it's all of that, and that makes him a natural fit for Boston. But as you guys know, when Zadorov is at his best, he's making some plays happen. Mm-hmm. He's taking some chances. He's becoming a threat that I think can surprise people when he activates and leads a rush. All of a sudden, the opposition is going, what is happening right now? And, you know, some things can happen there. So I feel like I worry to a certain degree that he's almost been pigeonholed out of the gate, and now he's going to have to find out what he truly is for this team. You know, the same thing happened with Chara in 2006-2007. They are completely different players. I will be the first to say that, of course. One's a Hall of Famer. One is still, you know, trying to figure out exactly what he is in this league. But that first year of Chara, he was really sort of, I have to fight, I have to hit, I have to do that. And it's like, well, no, you're signed to be all that and more. So I feel like right now, Zadorov is figuring out who he is, but I think his voice and his presence is something that is going to help this team as the season develops here and he gets more comfortable with the Bruins.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously Elliott's caused a stir when he put in 32 thoughts, and he said, hey, I'm not reporting anything, just wondering if there could be a reunion with Vancouver and Zadorov. And just from your sense of it, to us it just seems, you know, completely unlikely anything like that it would happen this quickly. What's your sense on that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this would be a very quick trigger for Don Sweeney to pull the plug on that. I think that, you know, he's admitted, speaking last week, that he's got to get more out of Lindholm and Zadorov, but they are committed to those guys. And I think they want to see how it looks under a new head coach who maybe has a different messaging style, a different, you know, scope of how to use that guy. I think one thing that's been really interesting with Zadorov here is the Bruins PK has actually been perfect under Joe Sacco since that switch. One of the big things that he's doing is he's actually deploying Zadorov as a top killer right now. He played over 5 minutes on the kill against Utah, and then he had a similar deployment the other night against Detroit. That's something that he wasn't getting regular minutes. Like, he was getting some, but it was a secondary, you know, complementary kind of role. They're putting him out in that role, and I think they're trying to rebuild his confidence as a D-zone threat and then go from there, because sort of what I said off the jump, like, this team has to play a grittier, more physical brand of hockey where they're blocking shots, they're getting in shooting lanes, they're getting their sticks, you know, in the way, and he's got such a long reach, right, that it's beneficial to them in that regard. So he kind of fits what they have to be. It's just, how much rope is he going to get under Joe Sacco? I think right now that answer is quite a bit. So I would be surprised if they made a move there. But if this season, you know, if this season goes belly up, they're going to have to move some money. They're going to have to take a tough call on a guy who's making more than $3 or $4 million. You can't keep moving out those kind of guys and wondering why things are staying the same.
So the uncomfortable question is, Brad Marchand a Bruin for life, or could we, like, you know, if the Bruins aren't a playoff team come February or as you approach the deadline, what happens there?
I have such a hard time seeing him in a different uniform.
Same.
It's just, I don't know if it's just, it's all we know, and that's why we feel that way, but he's just so committed to making things work here. He takes wearing the captaincy so seriously, as he should. He's very vocal still in terms of, like, he shows that he's the first one in, the last one out still. You know, and he learned that from Chara and Bergeron, and he's still been that guy. I just have a hard time imagining him walking away. And the other part with Marchand is that he envisions himself playing for another, I would say, 5 years. He views himself more as a Mark Recchi type playing into his early 40s than Bergeron, you know, walking out while you're still on top. He's often told me and told other people here in Boston, like, they're going to have to rip me off the ice. I'm not leaving. If I got something left in the tank, I'm not leaving. And so I think that for the Bruins, like, they want to surround him with more talent so that he doesn't have to be in every situation. But I don't think a trade happens unless he himself goes to the team and says, hey, listen, I want to get a Stanley Cup. I don't think we're going to do it here. Can you send me to Colorado to play with Nate McKinnon or whatever? But I just have a hard time seeing it happen unless he himself makes that push to management and says, I want to go somewhere and have a run at a Stanley Cup again.
Ty, before I let you go, you know, I follow you on Twitter. You're a great follow. I know you're a Patriots fan as well. I know it hasn't been easy. I know if you go going back to last year, some of those games really drove you nuts. But how do you feel about Drake May?
He's great. I mean, it's a great start. He's going to stop turning the ball over. I mean, you have a puncher's chance yesterday, and then he throws a ridiculous interception, and the game is over. And listen, their chances of winning were probably 5%, but he drops down to 0, and it's like, dude, come on. You got to, like, I can deal with the growing pains, but you can't be Jameis Winston and be a lock for 2 interceptions and 3 turnovers every game. Like, that just can't happen. So they are in the beginning stages of a multi-year rebuild, which is painful for Boston. But I will tell you this, that I was consistent. I never jumped ship. I never became a Bucks fan. I never bought a Bucks jersey. I look down on those people, and I don't welcome them back. When Drake May is good and the Patriots are good, you are not welcome back. You have to be a Bucks fan now, which is right now a good spot to be. But I have stuck with it. Yes, I have fallen asleep during a lot of Patriots games the last 2 years, but I want them to win. I stand by them. Drake May is the future. I just stop throwing the ball to the other team, please. You're killing me, man.
I mean, six Super Bowls in the Brady era. You knew the bill was going to come due at some point, Ty. These are just, you know, this is the cost of doing business with all those rings.
It is. And I grew up, you know, I'm 32. I grew up on, like, my first Patriots teams that I loved were, like, the Pete Carroll Patriots teams that were, like, 8-8 and were terrible. So, like, I'm like, yeah, whatever. They'll be bad for a few years. Then they'll be good. It'll be cool. The people who can't deal with that, babies. And I don't want them. I don't want them. They're babies. We don't have time for that. You can deal with it. It's how it is, man. It's how the NFL is.
Yeah.
It's how it goes. Ty, we appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
There is Ty Anderson, covering the Bruins, writer and host of The Hockey Show on 98.5 at the Sports Hub in Boston.
Listen, you can't ask a Boston guy to now provide an opinion on a football team that's not going through a great moment, because you heard the passion, the take from Ty.
You immediately heard the passion. Remember when they upset the Bengals in week one? I was like, wow, Patriots. And they gave the Seahawks a run in week two, ended up losing. As feels like ages ago now, but don't feel bad for any Boston fan. Sorry, I just don't. I really don't.
No, between the Bruins,
the Celtics, the Patriots,
the Red Sox.
How many titles do you want?
The Red Sox went from, like, being the saddest franchise outside of the Cubs.
In the 2000s, the Bruins, like, they pretty much average a parade a year. Yeah. The Boston fans pretty much average a parade a year.
Pretty much.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's been the golden era. Like, I think...
Sorry, if you're a New England Revolution fan... Not,
well, yeah, I mean...
Sorry!
Who cares?
Don't...
Who cares?
Imagine living in Boston and, like, the only team you're a fan of from the area is the New England Revolution.
That would be tough.
But, I mean, like... Pick a better league, man. Yeah. Like, but I would say, though, like, if you grew up and you were actually able to enjoy the first of those championships to the last one that happened, that might be the greatest era of any city in the past 100 years.
Oh,
in the four sports, right? Like, I don't think any fan who's lived through all of that, that was a fan of all those teams. No other city with four sports teams can brag about the same thing. Nobody.
Patriots were a laughingstock for a long time. They had the Super Bowl appearance with Drew Bledsoe.
The Bruins that was like over 50 years since the last time they
Bruins,
won a cup.
Bruins were bad for a long time, right? You had Ray Bourque, but he had to leave in order to win a cup, right? And I mean, the Red Sox were the Red Sox.
Yeah, they had
Bill Buckner. They had the curse of the Babe. And, you know, next thing you know, they turn over a 3-0 series deficit against the Yankees, and now they've won how many titles in the last 20 years?
Yeah, and the Celtics, I mean, they had a great run obviously, you know, through Auerbach and then Larry and all those guys. And then it went for a while after Larry Bird won. And it was like, are the Celtics ever going to do it again? Like, what's going on with the Celtics? And they pulled it off with Garnett and those guys. And now they want another one with this new iteration. It's just, it's sickening.
Yeah.
I'm sick. I'm disgusted.
Yep. Yep. It's nice if you're a sports fan and you get to enjoy championships. That doesn't happen for a lot of fan bases.
Yeah, Phil says, basketball Phil, Boston parade kid pissed me off. He's got so many parades growing up. Bruff isn't a fan either. Yeah. Talk about being jealous, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like you're like a 10-year-old kid. You've been to like seven parades.
Yeah, it's kind of maddening. Just a little bit. All right. Canucks and Bruins tomorrow. We've got Canuck Central at 2 o'clock. Colby Armstrong is going to join us. Give us a look-see at the mess that is the Pittsburgh Penguins, which starts at 2:30. We'll have Colby Armstrong tomorrow.
Yeah, and final word goes to Jordan Langley. We can't even win a Grey Cup in recent years.
Yeah, so. The Great Stain song. It's been a while since that for this city. All right. There's a couple Canadian championships in there. Shout out to Vanni Sartini, given some titles to the... now he's gone.
What?
Oh, wow.
I mean, those titles were so important, he still got fired. Imagine winning the only two titles in this city in the past, like, decade, and you still got fired over it. What does that tell you about the importance of those two titles?
Yeah. hope for the next manager is that Whitecaps ownership spends a little bit more money to help him... Yeah. Get over the hump. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. All right, that's it for Canuck Central. Talk to you tomorrow at 2 o'clock on Sportsnet 650.